Final hour, Darren Donica Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's enjoying their day so far. Darren McFarland, Willie Donnie, Chase McCabe with you. Mitch Light from The Athletic now joins us. We talk a little college football with him. The coaching carousel rolling right along. Who knows when it stops? I guess eventually when all the jobs are filled. Oregon, Mario Cristobal, gone. Manny Diaz, out at Miami, Florida. The Hurricanes are going to pay him $8 million per year. What did you make of that move?
Not surprising.
Not surprising, okay.
Miami sort of in a desperate situation where it's sort of like – it's an interesting case. You know, we've talked about this all the time, guys. We've learned that we just what we thought we knew about coaching hires, we don't know anymore. We all point to the Jim Harbaugh, Scott Frost, Chip Kelly cycle. Now, Harbaugh just won the Big Ten title, so that obviously it's been a rocky road, but it's worked out. It's sort of like with Nebraska hiring Scott Frost. Like, if this doesn't work, then what do we do? Mm-hmm. That's sort of where Miami is right now. If this doesn't work, then what do we do? It appears that the school is making as big of a financial commitment, not just in the salary of the coach, head coach, as it's ever been made there. Now, the thing that would interest me is that there's no doubt he is going to get players there. He got great players to Oregon. He was on the verge of signing a second straight top six or seven class. But we've seen his teams have kind of yet to live up to their potential. They did win 10 games in the Rose Bowl 2 years ago, but this team this past year got punched, dominated, whatever, the line of scrimmage by Utah twice in a 3 or 4 week span, was good enough to beat Ohio State but couldn't beat Stanford. So he is far, of all these big-name hires, the guys have been kind of stolen away, he's far less proven and accomplished. But I'd still put this in the home run hire for Miami as far as uniting the fan base. You know they're gonna have good players going forward, better players. And the recruiting hasn't fallen off that much. I mean, it hasn't been what you'd expect with all the talent there, but they will start signing top 10 classes on a consistent basis.
Doing it on the up and up?
Yeah, I mean,
NIL, does NIL help that? I mean,
I'm sure it can and will. I mean, we saw what happened at Texas earlier this week. You know, Miami is one of the first schools, in fact, where I forgot the dollar figure, but a booster came out and said I think every scholarship player was going to get $5,000. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm skeptical is not the right word. We'll see how all this plays out over the next few years. I think there's going to be kind of a market correction in a few years with NIL and maybe some places realize it's not the best investment, but I don't think businesses are necessarily doing it as an investment either, but that's a complicated issue. But I'm excited. Like, I think college, and this is sort of a cliche, but it's true, college football is better when USC is good, like at Lincoln Riley there. I think college football is better when Miami's good. I think we all live here in SEC country. SEC is a great league, but college football is better when there's more geographic, you know, parity or whatever you want to call it. There's just better teams around the country.
Okay, so who ends up in Eugene?
That's a good question. I mean, that's the one, like when you were introducing the segment saying the coaching carousel is going to stop soon, you know, that's pretty much it. Unless Oregon hires someone away, then I'll keep spinning. You saw people say Chip Kelly. I mean, it seems that that's a reach to me. He hasn't proven he can. He had a pretty good year at UCLA, but
he's the favorite according to the sports books.
Okay, well, you know what? By the way, this is another subject. I saw someone tweet about this that the sports books, and Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong. I know you're into gambling more than I am. That the sports books on the coaching hires don't take much money at all, and the odds are just basically set sort of on a whim. I think someone said that an intern do it. It's just sort of like content to promote the sports book. Like that. That's why when you see some really strange names out there and you're like, that's never going to happen, it's because people just kind of throw it together. So I'm not disputing what you just said or that's going to happen, but that was just sort of something I saw on Twitter a couple weeks ago. But I don't know. It just seems like it's a reach to the past when it's sort of a different era in college football. So there do not seem to be a lot of fits at Oregon. It's a very good job. It's a job that got more difficult with Lincoln Riley now at USC. Doesn't have a natural recruiting base, but it's still, you know, obviously they got a lot of money there. So I am very intrigued to see what happens there.
Okay, so going back to the ACC part of things, two openings. Bronco Mendenhall out at Virginia. They've got an opening. David Cutcliffe out at Duke. They've got an opening. What do you see those programs? Where do you see them going?
It appears that Virginia's Anthony Poindexter, I believe, is the co-DC at Penn State, played at Virginia. In fact, someone else who was up for the job, I think Tony Elliott at Clemson was kind of informed that someone else was getting the job. I think that's where they're going to go. My money on the Duke job would be Josh Gattis, who played at Wake Forest. Obviously, was assistant here at Vanderbilt with James Franklin, then went to Penn State and went to Alabama, went to Michigan. I think he was just named the Broyles Award winner, like literally a few minutes ago, as the offensive coordinator at Michigan. So that's my guess. And to me, that's why it hasn't happened yet. And this is just sort of no real inside information, just sort of reading between the lines. Is, you know, they had a, because I think they agreed to split ways with David Cutcliffe at least a week ago, or maybe a little longer, and Gattis obviously had the championship game, and they're still active. So that would be my call if I were Duke.
FIU, Butch Davis, no longer their head coach. They've got an opening. Where do you think they turn? And what did you make of Joe Moorhead getting hired at Akron?
Yeah,
which has been a bottom-feeder job for like 5 years, one of the worst programs in the country.
Yeah, no clue on FIU. Moorhead was interesting because a lot of people were, you know, thought that he was in line to get a better job, that people right. in the industry thought he got a raw deal at Mississippi State, and he's done such a good job at Oregon as an offensive coordinator. He's very well respected. I mean, this is all earlier in the year, but, you know, when there's talk about maybe Pat Narduzzi, either if he wasn't even retained before the season started or if he moved on, that he'd be that Joe Moorhead, being a Pennsylvania guy, would be a natural fit there. So I don't know. Maybe Moorhead just wanted out of Oregon or whatever, but you're right. Akron is one of the more difficult jobs in the country. The funding is terrible. They hired Tom Arth away from Chattanooga a few years ago. I think they gave him 3 years there and fired him there. So, you know, coaches have big egos. They think they can win everywhere. And so, you know, I don't think he's doing it for the money. I haven't seen, but my guess is he's probably making more as offensive coordinator at Oregon than he will be as a head coach.
Well, I think you're right.
Mitch Light is with us. He is for The Athletic, one of the college football editors, with their fine coverage of the sport. Mitch, we had a colleague of ours text a question really directed at you, and that is, for Notre Dame, they went with Freeman. Very intriguing introductory press conference. Everybody trying to get to know this guy. Unique hire, 35 years of age, only been at Notre Dame for 1 year, but everybody seems to think he's the rising star. But the question was asked, and it was kind of from a Vanderbilt perspective, if Clark Lee, just if the Vanderbilt job had never come open, let's just say in theory, and the right job, he never went after a head coaching job, would he have been in the running to be elevated with Brian Kelly taking the job at LSU?
Yeah, I think so. And this would be assuming that the timing was the same and all the factors were the same when Brian Kelly left that Notre Dame, you know, in the same universe, so to speak, if he's still there, I think he would be. I'm not saying he would get the job. I think Notre Dame has had bad luck, not bad time, I wouldn't call it luck, that hasn't gone well with first-time head coaches. You know, Bob Davey did some decent things but didn't really work out. Charlie Weiss, obviously. So there might be some apprehension on the Notre Dame side. You know, hey, we're Notre Dame. We're not going to hire a first-time head coach. The one thing about Marcus Freeman, though, is in the, kind of worth the gamble is his recruiting chops. Like, he is a – obviously, you pay attention to this at all. Everyone knows he's a great recruiter. Clark Lee was a fine recruiter at Notre Dame, very well respected, did a great job there. But I don't think he stood out for his recruiting, where if you hire Clark Lee as a first-time head coach, you're gambling maybe on everything, where when you hire Marcus Freeman, you're gambling on a lot of things, but you know you're going to get the recruiting part there. So I think that made him more attractive to Notre Dame than Clark Lee would have been. But I still think there's a very good chance Clark Lee could have been the head coach at Notre Dame had he, you know, had, like you said, the job not come open, or Vanderbilt, you know, hired, I think Lance Leipold was he's at Kansas now from Buffalo, basically came in second for the job there. So it's clearly something that, you know, it's a fair question to ask. It's interesting how things work out. There's so many coaching what-ifs out there. it's kind of fun to go through.
Mitch, speaking of recruiting, Brian Kelly I saw earlier today, and you can help fill in the gaps here, I believe, but did he not
hire...
Have
a fake accent again? Or?
I think this was in print, so I don't know whether this was spoken aloud or not, but he hired the McNeese State head coach to be his recruiting guy coming back to LSU. So tell us about that.
Yeah, Frank Wilson. It's a crucial hire for Brian Kelly. You know, any job, when you hire someone who's quote-unquote an outsider, I've always thought it's kind of overrated where people say, oh, he doesn't have ties. Like, any good coach can kind of learn the lay of the land, learn the high school coaches and all that. But it obviously helps if you've got an assistant who's good at it. And Frank Wilson kind of made – he was an assistant at Tennessee for a while, but then, you know, really made a name for himself at LSU from 2010 to 2016, one of the best recruiting assistants in the country. Then he moved on to UTSA as a head coach. Didn't quite work out there. Went to McNeese State as a head coach. He's still the coach. They hired him. It wasn't like he got let go. So Brian Kelly hired him away from being a head coach at McNeese State, and that was a very, very important. I think he's from New Orleans. I know he was a high school coach in New Orleans, so you kind of know how important that is. So, yeah, a great hire for Brian Kelly. And he also brought Brian Polian, who was a head coach in Nevada years ago but was a special teams coordinator at Notre Dame. He's coming along, too. So I think those are the only two position coaches hired so far.
This is going to sound like we're doing an interview in the bayou somewhere, but Joe Brady got let go. Where does he end up? Because I got to believe somebody on a college staff is going to be very, very intrigued about him.
Yeah, there's one thing I saw. One of the New Orleans guys, media guys I follow on Twitter, said something about how he just did not like recruiting. So I think everyone is assuming that he's going to go back to college. But remember, he was in the NFL before he went to LSU. He was at the Saints, and he was at LSU for a couple of years, or maybe it's 1 year, and then went to the Panthers. So I wouldn't make just the obvious assumption that he's going back to college. But if he were, he recruited, while he was at LSU, he recruited Caleb Williams, the Oklahoma quarterback, very heavily to LSU. And obviously with Brent Venables now at Oklahoma, there's been rumors about hires there, but nothing's been done there. So that might make sense. He'll, if he does want to go back to college, obviously he's going to have a lot of opportunities. But like I said, not so certain he will be going back to college.
We're talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic. What do you think? I know we kind of talked about this a few weeks ago when he got fired, but you know, now that the coaching carousel is starting to settle, is it just Dan Mullen's going to maybe do TV for a year and then get back in? Could the NFL potentially be an option for him?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and it kind of depends on what Dan Mullen wants to do. You know, Ed Orgeron's already come out and said he doesn't want to coach this year, wants to take a year off. You know, Dan Mullen, obviously financially these guys don't need to work, but they're grinders. They've been coaching their whole lives. So he could be an offensive coordinator if his ego would allow it, you know, at a major school. If, you know, depending on the carousel and the openings, he could probably find a job at a group of five school. Could go to the NFL, position coach, maybe even a coordinator. So I think, you know, he's a guy that he'll just kind of have to check his ego at the door, because that's the deal with him, supposedly, you know, those around him. But very well-respected, I don't know if he's the most well-liked, but very well-respected offensive coach.
So what do you think about the playoff matchups? Alabama, the number one seed, will take on Cincinnati, and then Georgia, Michigan.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to them. I think they'll be fun. I'm looking forward to seeing Cincinnati match up. I've been really impressed with them. You know, midseason, I was sort of latter, maybe the, you know, the after midseason, when it looked like they could really do this thing, and to start watching them a little more closely, you know, watch them struggle with the Tulsa game. But the week before that, Navy, I was kind of like, not very impressive. But give them credit down the stretch. SMU had some injuries in that game, but they pounded SMU, and with the national stage, they played very well against a good Houston team, so I think they belong. But, you know, I say this all the time. If they lose by three touchdowns to Alabama, it doesn't mean they don't belong. It just means Alabama's better than the number four team in the country. We go through this all the time. Like, hey, Notre Dame got blown out in the first round of the playoffs. They didn't belong. No, it's because the number one seed is really, really good, and it's probably going to beat the number four seed no matter who it is. So, you know, the Michigan-Georgia matchup, fascinated by, because – you know, we all thought Georgia was the, no doubt about it, number one team in the country. Their defensive stats were obscene, and just that was one of the more shocking college football games I've ever seen. Not that Alabama won, but the margin and the way they did it. I think Michigan matches up well with the line of scrimmage. They're very good. They can run the ball there. So, you know, the spread seems a little high to me based on the way Michigan's playing down the stretch.
Okay, so if Alabama wins this whole thing, this is, you know, been a season where I've heard people say it's the worst team Saban's had since his first year, since he's been there. Yet they just won the SEC and the number one team in the country. Have they been close in games? Did they have to scratch and claw and go to overtime to beat Auburn? Absolutely. So where would you rank this in coaching jobs if Saban is able to lead them back to a national championship?
Well, I think you'd have to rank it at the top. And it's not just the eye test that tells us it's not, you know, a great Alabama team. And this is all relative when we say not a great Alabama team. And I think, you know, Bill Connolly, who does the S&P Plus on ESPN, I've known Bill for years, and I really trust his formulas. And I think he said this is basically the worst, quote-unquote, worst Nick Saban Alabama team since his first year, the team that went 6-6 or 7-6, whatever. So it's not insulting to say that. It's kind of like the way it's been. And if they are able to rise to the occasion and have one of the all-time shocking results in college football and then string together two more wins, then, you know, it's just another feather in the Nick Saban cap. And if we want to say it's his best coaching job, who's to argue? But it's been, you know, that game will go down as one of the, like I said, most surprising results. And you know, is it Bryce Young? Is it Nick Saban? It's a little bit of everything over there at Alabama. But I agree, Chase. You know, if they are able to cap this thing off with two more wins, it's just like, what more can you say about Nick Saban?
Okay, of the big bowls, of the New Year's Six bowls, Ole Miss Baylor is by far my favorite. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, that's – let me pull them up here just so I don't miss any. The Rose Bowl I think is going to be fun too, because – we all know Ohio State's potential. When they're at their best, they might, you know, they're one of the four best teams in the country. Their problem is they haven't been at their best enough, and in two games they lost. And Utah, I don't know how much you guys have watched them, but just very impressive. The way they pounded Oregon, and you know, it's like they made a change of quarterback after about two or three games, and they've been great ever since then. And on another note too, the way fans are, you know, no one seems to like their offensive coordinator. I thought Andy Ludwig did a great job at Vanderbilt. I thought he was underappreciated, and he has done a great job at Utah. They have that same identity they've had. They score a lot of points. They're diverse on offense. So I would say I'm with you on the Sugar Bowl, but I'm also looking forward to the Rose Bowl a lot.
Okay, going to be fun for sure. Hey, appreciate the time as always, Mitch. We'll do it again next week.
No problem. Take care, guys.
Mitch Light of The Athletic joins us every Tuesday at 1 o'clock talking college football. We'll have much more in the fourth hour, but first, Willie, tell us about loans.
All right, let's go loan pronto. The year-end rate is out there for you. Finish with a bang in 2021 and get your finances set for 2022. Mortgage rates are on the move, but you can still lower your house payment with Loan Pronto. Call Loan Pronto now and do what you maybe have been putting off if you've been listening to me do this commercial, because this has been out there, and there's no guarantee that the interest rates will stay this low. So act while you can. You can refinance right now and take advantage of the super popular zero-cost refi program. Lots of people doing this before the year ends, so don't wait. You can refi, get a rate with an APR in the low twos with no junk fees and no closing costs. Yes, they pay your closing costs even if you refinance 6 months ago. Loan Pronto's all digital process is fast and easy, virtually no paperwork. Most loans get closed in 14 days. And if you act now, you could even skip your next two house payments. How does that sound for your finances going into 2022? No mortgage payment the next 2 months? Improve your monthly rate? Gotta love that. Call Loan Pronto now. Don't waste any more time. Rates are still really low, and you've got nothing to lose. See how much you can save and lower that house payment going into the new year by calling 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780, or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender. NMLS 166-1781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible. NMLS consumeraccess.org.
Hey, don't forget to join us here at ESPN 1025 The Game and Newton Motor Group. Sweet team up this holiday season to help children In Middle Tennessee was Souls for Music City. More than 4,000 children in the metro area experience homelessness. Over 18,000 here in Middle Tennessee. The Game and Cromwell Media are teaming up Souls for Souls to provide a new pair of shoes to the children who are experiencing homelessness. Souls for Souls works for schools and community partners to deliver new shoes to kids who need them the most. Newton Motor Group will be making a donation to Souls for Souls for every test drive at any Newton Group Motor Group. 4 locations now through the end of the year. Need your help to give these kids the joy and confidence they deserve. For more information and to donate, go to thegamenashville.com/shoes. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, our show is presented by Gratian CBD. Gratian CBD products curated for life. It was interesting. Mitch brought up Kyle Whittingham at Utah. It is amazing. Do you guys know how long he's been there? Don't look it up. How long has he been there as their head coach?
I'll say 7 seasons.
It's more than that, because he was being considered for the job when Butch Jones got the Tennessee job. So that's going back, that's 10 years. So it's double digits.
He's been there 17 years.
17.
Yeah, like I said, 17.
He's had 2 losing seasons. 2 in 17 years. How has no one pried him away from Utah?
Tennessee
tried. How
has
that never happened?
Tennessee tried.
It's unbelievable. And it's not like he's – it's not like they've made him the 7th highest coach, you know, salary-wise, highest paid coach in the country. I think he makes like, you know, $4 million. I mean, I know $4 million, you know, Utah. But still, like at today's standards, like four. I think he make $4.1 million is maybe the number that I saw. That's like – that's middle-of-the-road stuff of all the Division I schools. I guess he really likes it. He has done an unbelievable job. 2 losing seasons in 17 seasons at Utah. And yet he just keeps trucking along there at Utah. I guess he just doesn't have any interest in leaving. Okay, let's talk about the Final Four. Let's talk about the New Year's Eve games, which is dumb to be playing on, but that's what we're given. I went on Robbie and Rex Road yesterday morning. And thank goodness Michelle texted me, because I was about to walk out the door to go get my back fixed. And I was like, oops, that's right. And I said some things about Cincinnati. I had some pretty spirited conversations with friends of mine, most of them Big Ten honks, that were just, oh, isn't this the – this is great. New blood in Cincinnati, this is fantastic. Okay, that's fine. I mean, yeah, it's new blood. And, you know, Cincinnati's in. Good job, Oklahoma State, losing to Baylor. I don't know what they would have done. I don't know if they would have still put Cincinnati in or not. I'm not sure. But is this real? I mean, my pushback is, well, that's great that you're excited, and that's fine. I don't have to be excited, because I don't think they're the top 4 team in the country. They deserve to be in there, because nobody else could stand up and take the position. So, you know. Goodbye them, I guess. But, you know, when they're getting creamed in the second half and everybody's falling asleep, are we supposed to be excited about that? And why – and my pushback also was, why is it every year Notre Dame – every time Notre Dame gets in, I hear from the same group of friends, they don't deserve to be in there. They're ridiculous. They're scheduled. They haven't played – they're not a top 4 team. And then, see, told you they didn't deserve to be in there, when those same people – will not go see, told you, whenever they get creamed by Alabama. I'm just telling you. So, yeah, that's a little bit of the Baby Ruth in the punch bowl approach. But I'm sorry. Sorry, not sorry. I'm not going to be like everybody else, like, oh, new blood, great. Well, you know, will it be a game? Is it going to be a game we're going to be glued to? I suspect not.
So what do you want? Like, if – I mean, I – if you don't want a group of 5, because, I mean, yeah, they're probably going to get beat by Alabama. I don't know. I mean, but watching them play Navy and other teams like that this year, then I would say they're probably going to get beat by Alabama. But would you have rather had Notre Dame, that they beat earlier this year, get in just because it would be a better game?
No. No, because how could you? I mean,
right.
I get it.
I mean, the best four teams.
Notre Dame lost at home to Cincinnati, so that's your fault. Like that, I get it. I'm just not. I have nothing against schools like Cincinnati or anybody that's not in the Power Five. I don't think they're a top four team. I've told you guys this all year. I've watched them. I'm not impressed by them.
So who would you put in?
I, that's the problem. That's what I'm saying. Like I understand why. Thanks, Oklahoma State. So let me ask you guys this: who gets in if Oklahoma State beats Baylor?
I think Cincinnati would have gotten in.
Cincinnati still gets in.
You still think they get in?
Mm-hmm.
I think they deserve to get in. Now let me give you a little history of the 1-4 game since the playoffs came in. 2015 is the first year of the playoffs. Now
I'd say most of them are all blowouts. Be my guess.
Right. So what's your point about Cincinnati? The number four team gets blown out most of the time. Now, the first year, Ohio State, in the famous game, and why am I already forgetting the guy's name? The third quarterback who came in late.
Cardale Jones.
Oh, right.
Cardale Jones came in and orchestrated a great upset with Ezekiel Elliott and company.
And then they beat
Marcus Mariota in Oregon the next week to win it. They pulled the upset. They are the only number four. Nope, that's not true either. Let me take a look. Let's go year by year. Second year, Clemson 37, Oklahoma 17. 2017, number one Alabama 24, number four Washington 7.
I thought it was worse than that. Okay.
Well, it was domination.
Yeah.
Washington, you never thought they were going to win that game. The following year, number four Alabama 24, number one Clemson 6. I don't remember. What? 2018.
That was the Kelly Bryant Clemson team. They played in the the Sugar Bowl.
That was a blowout. But I didn't realize Alabama was number four.
That's the only time they've met in the semis, right? And not the,
correct because then they went on to beat Georgia in the
the overtime walk off. The following year, Alabama 45, number four Oklahoma 34. But that was, I believe, the Kyler Murray, but it really wasn't that close when you think about it. It was Alabama was scoring.
It was a blowout
at will
going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
right.
The following year was LSU 63, Oklahoma 28 in the 1-4, and then last year was another game that the score was not indicative of how lopsided the game was, 31-14. So, if Cincinnati gets mauled by Alabama, they're no different than most of the number fours, would be my question. And most of those number fours that I'm talking about are Power Five teams. So I just think you've got to have a pathway for a team like Cincinnati to get in. What happens in the final, in the semifinal, is up to them. But they deserve to be in there. They're undefeated.
Yeah, it's not a good year. It's not a good year for college football.
But what's different than last year?
Which may make it exciting, may not.
What's different than last year?
Well, the last year the big boys were all around. I mean,
so who cares? But who cares if it's a big boy as opposed to Cincinnati? Well, if it's a blowout anyway.
I mean, it sounds like you just want
Oklahoma got blown out with Kyler Murray. Wasn't Kyler Murray the quarterback in 2020? 63-28.
It sounds like you would rather just have the group of five go do their own thing, and then you have the Power Five playoff.
Yeah, is that what you want?
No, I want them to be legit, and I just
how much more legit can you be if you're Cincinnati? How much more legit could you be? You won all your games. You won at Notre Dame.
Are they better than LSU right now? This team and LSU. I'm asking Darren.
You talking about
this year's LSU team? Is Cincinnati better than them?
I don't know if it's heck yes. I didn't think LSU was going to beat Texas A&M, and they did. To end the season. Texas A&M, good. They beat Alabama.
Okay.
LSU just beat Texas A&M.
Is Texas A&M better than Cincinnati?
I don't know. I don't know.
Is Auburn better than Cincinnati?
Do you want to just have this is why
I'm asking this for a reason.
By the way, these are really good. I don't know.
Do you know why I'm asking you that question?
I would say these are all neutral site games. I'm trying to figure out what would the odds makers have these games at? Like what kind of spread?
They'd probably
neutral site. Don't you think they would probably all be like a 3-point or less favorite?
The SEC teams?
Yeah.
I think A&M definitely would. LSU
would
be close.
Too,
yeah.
Don't you think? Bo Nix.
If Bo Nix is playing, yeah.
Definitely favored.
But the reason I'm asking.
Let's just have the SEC have a tournament and forget about all the other teams.
Right, but here's why I'm asking that question. Texas A&M beat Alabama 41-38. Bama beat LSU 20-14 in a game that was much closer than anybody thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And Bama beat Auburn 24-22 in 4 overtimes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so, I'm not saying that.
Answer your question, yeah. No, I think those teams beat Cincinnati. Yeah, I do.
And so I'm asking that too. So you don't think that there's a chance that Cincinnati could actually give Alabama a game?
I think those three teams could have easily run the same schedule, Cincinnati. I mean, I think there's a lot of teams that could have gone undefeated with Cincy's schedule. I just do. They got one win. It's nice. It's a nice win. It's a really good win. But that's it.
There's no other pathway they could be in the playoffs. But again, you're saying the same thing, that they should not be eligible to be picked.
No, I'm not saying
based on the schedule
eligible.
They play.
I've never used the word eligible ever. That's your word.
That's
mine.
What you're saying.
No, I've never said eligible. I think that last year's Cincinnati team was better than this year's Cincinnati team.
No, that I'd give you. I mean, I think Ritter played better
last year. I've watched them both.
I thought Ritter would be a legit contender for the Heisman, and he wasn't. Mm-hmm. So, no, I mean, I will give you that. But again, neither one of us can give an answer of, okay, if you don't think Cincinnati's the fourth best team in the country, then who do you put in?
Yeah, no, I haven't said they don't belong in there, because they do, because nobody else could stand up and do anything. So I get it. Like I said, I don't know, though, Oklahoma State wins. Do I know for sure Cincinnati's in? No, I don't know that for sure. I think it would have been really, really interesting.
Well, and what if Alabama?
But it doesn't matter.
What if Alabama had lost? If Georgia beats Alabama, like everybody thought was going to happen, mm-hmm. then, you know, I would have. Now, I still think that they would have been out. But you can also make the argument that Alabama with two losses deserves a look. Hell, I'll make the argument that even Ohio State probably deserves a little bit of a look just because of their schedule. But That's not what they went with. Notre Dame too.
The committee
four best teams.
The committee was given a very good draw based on what happened on Saturday. They didn't have to debate.
Yeah.
Had a couple games gone different ways, they would have had a mess and they would have been under fire, because no matter what they chose, there would have been a lot of second guessing.
Notre Dame went back to being independent this year, right?
Yes, correct.
They were not doing.
But they play like a
but they didn't
hybrid.
But they've always kind of done that, though, right? They've always had BC, I feel like.
But it's more so the last few years. They've played 5 ACC games.
Okay. But so, I mean, what are they doing? Like, this is year, right? Here's a prime example. Like, this, they hurt them. Sitting there idle did not help them at all. Get a game to give yourself a chance. Sitting idle.
Yeah, but who would play them? Like, I mean, like, what kind of opponent are you going to get if you play conference championship weekend? That's the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say go get a game.
Right. There was no, I'm saying this year, you're right, in the ACC. I mean, okay, Wake Forest or Pittsburgh, either one, does that change anything? If you're playing them and beat them, I don't know.
Not if Cincinnati's undefeated. If Cincinnati would have lost, then I think Notre Dame might have snuck in.
Oh, I definitely think if Cincinnati loses, I think Notre Dame's probably in with how everything else shook out.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you look at you're right. I mean, they played Florida State, and Florida State gave them a game. I mean, Toledo gave them a game. We were talking earlier in the year.
It almost worked to Notre Dame's advantage not to play. So there are some years where it helps you not to play in a championship game.
Sometimes, yep.
Aren't you going to miss these debates when they go to 12?
We'll have new debates, believe me.
Yeah, there'll never not be debates.
I know. I'm being sarcastic.
We could touch a little bit more on the Georgia-Michigan side of things when we come back to wrap up Tuesday's edition of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. But first, let me talk to you about my friends at Cool Springs MD. Yep, you've heard me talk about them for years, because I've been going there for years, and they've been helping me for years. They've got a very experienced staff over there. Michelle and their staff have been taking really good care of me. They've been helping me be healthy and happier. They've helped me improve my quality of life, and I hope you want that like I do, especially as we all age. It gets tougher as we age. I was out yesterday, bad back, couldn't move all weekend. Could barely get around from point A to point B. In fact, most of the time I was laid up. It stinks, right, getting old. But they've got things that can help you. And part of it is maybe you've tacked on some unwanted pounds, and it's affecting your back. Certainly not good to put on some a lot of weight whenever you've got a bad back, especially a bad lower back. Well, they've got programs and products and people that can get you headed right back in the direction you want to be at. PRP, Hair Removal Botox. They would love to talk to you about rejuvenation. Your appearance should be important, and that's a struggle as we get older. And finally, hormone therapy. Have you ever had your levels checked? Do you realize they go down naturally as we age? You know that can affect you. It can affect your energy. It can affect your mood, your drive. Just can affect how you feel, and you're like, what's going on? Well, their experienced staff would love to discuss BHRT, testosterone, and estrogen. They do it all, and they do it all under one roof. They're out in Cool Springs, the state-of-the-art facility at 1642 Westgate Circle. If you want to learn everything about them, just go to their website, coolspringsmd.com, or you can always pick up the phone and schedule an appointment or a consultation by dialing this number, 615-283-7291. Well, not yet. We're close. Adam Rittenberg from ESPN has tweeted out, a source has confirmed Pittsburgh offensive coordinator Mark Whipple is stepping down and is not expected to coach in the Peach Bowl against Michigan State. Very interesting. What does that mean? I don't know. But seems like the reaction on Twitter is, Okay. So the Georgia-Michigan game, anybody think that line was a little high? Did you? Anybody surprised by that line?
Yeah, what, 7.5?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was surprised
by
that.
That was a little high.
I thought it would be maybe 6.5, somewhere in there, but less than a touchdown. So I was surprised by it.
My number one question with Georgia, well, I actually have two. Number one, in the mindset of Saturday, just knowing that they didn't have to win and they could still be in the Final Four, did that affect their play at all?
Yeah, I think it did. I mean,
there was a lot of things that were very uncharacteristic of Georgia, or, you know, were they just exposed because they've overachieved? I don't know. This is to me where it comes down. And here's the other thing that strikes me about Georgia. I have felt all year long that Stetson Bennett is a very average quarterback, and if you can make him have to make big plays, you would have a chance. I watched a lot of games where he could have sat back there for 5 Mississippi, and nobody was going to come in there and touch him. He just had all day to throw. He never had to make clutch throws, and then all of a sudden, boom, he's in a game where you got to score to win. And he's not that kind of guy to me. So can Michigan get into that kind of game with them? Like Georgia, you know, you can win a national title. I saw Jay Barker in 1992 not have to really do a whole lot as their quarterback. Now, he became a much better college quarterback as he got older, and he did start doing a lot of stuff to win games. But when he was playing for them in 92, it was just let the defense take it. So that will be my question with Georgia. Can they get back up to that sort of dominating defense where Stetson Bennett doesn't really have to do any more than he did most of the time this year?
What's Michigan's strength on offense? Running the football. Can Georgia stop the run?
Yeah.
That's what it's going to boil down to, because they're not going to have a guy like Bryce Young back there slinging around, running all over the place. Michigan's strength is running the football, and they're good at it. But Georgia's going to have to stop that. And by the way, this just in, they're capable of doing that. Yeah, it's one hiccup, but they've proved all year where they average, what, less than 7 points a game for the entire year on average? and then they give up the big one in the SEC championship game. I don't know. I was thought that line was a little high. I figured it would be around 6. 7 and up over that touchdown mark is really interesting that they would come out with that.
I think that's definitely going to be the best game of the two. At least it has the potential.
Yep. All right, that'll do it for us today. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
You did it.
We'll see you then.